That's his revenue.
All right, let's come to order and do the fire department, general government.
Just for a clear record, Mr. Chairman, this would be if the governor, if the legislature and governor approved the wildland fire protection program, this would have, under the interlocal contract between Story County and the Story County Fire Protection District, would execute its responsibilities as part of Story County general government for wildland fire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable board members. Just to be clear, this is a function that Division of Forestry has done previously, and through the interlocal contracts for the Wildland Fire Protection Program, the county's taken over that responsibility. The county has then turned around and told the 474 Fire District, specifically me, that I will be tasked with overseeing and managing this particular area. With that said, this funding comes from a 0.11 fire tax against ad valorem rates. In the last fiscal year, that generated $525,000. In this next fiscal year, it generates $496,000. There's been a long-standing balance in that fund as well for capital equipment replacements, and we are asking to utilize some of those funds and a deficit spending balance to replace some of the equipment. And I can break that down for you here. Salaries and wages, fringe benefits, and I can go through that line by line if you'd like, or I can just give you a total number. That total number for salaries and fringe benefits for 11 seasonal physicians is $209,067.60. Operating line items, we have $2,200 for training. Excuse me, I'm going off two different documents here, the one that you've been given and my particular notes here that I think are in your packages. I'll talk about salaries and fringe benefits. Out of those 11 personnel, there will be four lead seasonals and seven seasonal firefighter positions. And I think it's important to note that those are tied directly back to the costs of the Wildland Fire Protection Program. If we do not provide seasonals, we being, again, county general government, are not to provide seasonal employees, the cost of that Wildland Fire Protection Program will incrementally ratchet up. That's built into that model the state's used to develop that cost. So training, sorry to digress there for a moment. Service and supplies, there's $2,200, and that's essentially $200 per person for each of the 11 employees. What we generally would like to do with that is bulk that into the $2,200, and we'll have to teach these folks such courses as engine boss, wildland urban interface firefighting, some of those types of things. Mostly this is the cost of materials, and if we have to have any kind of special instructors come in from the National Wildfire Coordinating Group to instruct those. Going down a little further, we go into uniforms. Uniforms will be a T-shirt and a golf shirt with blue Nomex Kevlar pants, and those are $500 each for a total of $5,500 for all 11 employees. Professional services are lumped into the budget as $207,601.11, and I think Hughes probably rounded those off a little bit, so these are my notes. That's broken out to $150,000 to the Division of Forestry for the voluntary for the WFPP program. That's the insurance cost, basically, per year. $57,000 of that is shared costs, which Division of Forestry has always done with us, and they break out as such. Office supplies are $400, telephones are $900, travels $150, equipment maintenance $5,000, utilities $3,886, operating supplies $914, auto maintenance $5,000, tires $2,500, fire protection supplies $1,200, gas and diesel $5,000. Extinguisher maintenance, $150. Ambulance medical supplies, $2,500. And that's all lumped into that number of $57,601. Continuing down the line items, medical physicals, we are required to do pre-employment medical examinations. At this level, and I know that this is probably politically incorrect to say, but it's per NRS, at these age groups that we'll be hiring, their physical exams will run about $400 each for a total of $4,400. When we get into the 474 Fire District, you'll see numbers all over the place for different types of physicals. That directly relates back to age per NRS regulations. Capital outlay is $105,442. We propose to replace a water tender, replace or refurbish. We're going through some analysis on that. I think that it's going to be actually cheaper to purchase outright a used water tender than to replace an existing water tender. I don't want to spend good for bad. So that's $65,000. There's $21,437 for seasonal wildland personal protective equipment, another $11,305 for additional wildland equipment, $7,700 for handheld radios. Moving down that same line item, we included the $51,244 for the TRI payback. So that brings us to a total in service and supplies of $376,387.11. Total salaries and benefits, $209,067.60, for a grand total of $585,454.71. Back to where I started here. Of that, $89,454.71 is what we're requesting to use out of year-end fund balances. And I don't have that number in front of me. I apologize. The comptroller may know it better than I do. I believe there's about $500,000 roughly in year-end fund balances. Mr. Gallagher?
556,317.
So we're requesting...
It'll probably move up probably a little bit.
Yeah.
It's healthy.
Right, and they've been saving those funds for years to do exactly what I'm requesting, is to use those for water tender replacement and some other capital outlay projects. And that is it in a nutshell, unless you'd like me to go through all the specifics. I know it's been a long day, and I think you have all my budget notes to break all this down specifically.
And I think you've explained it specifically one-on-one with each of us, haven't you?
I believe so. I think when we did the district tour with everyone, we've talked about this program. And
yeah, when we go through this next year, this will be a little simpler because we'll have hopefully made the changeover. So,
and the cost for next year, too, will go down. A lot of this is startup costs. We don't have any handheld radios for these individuals. We don't have the PPE. We don't have the uniforms. Those costs will all go away next year.
But don't we have to end up with the cost savings overall compared to what we were paying NDF in total before and what we pay them as we're starting up this program?
We do. That cost savings. If you look at the budget for 2012-13 versus the request for 2013-14, there's a savings of about $29,000. In addition to the savings that we'll seek next year.
Right. We've been guessing that.
Yeah.
I don't mind if he's, the initial investment is what it is. Initial investment, yeah. If it is what it is.
First year startups, and they have to do that. You know, the one thing that I want to do is I want to see what the chief thinks about this. This, the wildfire, wildland PPE, and also structured PPE. Should we not have a separate account for that?
I think we have this conversation every year, Mr. Gallagher, and sometimes we put it into capital outlay, sometimes we put it into, I'd be happy to.
Services, it's actually operational. It's actually operational expenses. Give you the ability to say, this is my cost, this is what my cost has been last, whatever. Try and reclassify what we can in various other ones.
I think that'd be great.
But I think a separate account for what? Structure here, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Let's put it in there because it is significant. It's a darn big item, and unfortunately OSHA says you can't use it forever. It's only 10 years or so, I think.
You were listening.
No,
I was just going to bring that up.
Have that as a separate line item. That way the chief always accounts for it, but at least that's lame. Sit there and do that.
And it is essentially an unfunded mandate because of the OSHA regs. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts, and our risk exposure from fines alone are ominous.
Yeah, I agree. That's
The other thing I want to point out, and again, between as we've said repeatedly today, as we said last year's budget hearings, the tentative is just that. It is a tentative budget.
Yes.
A few of these need some minor tweaking. The chief and I talked for hours yesterday about certain things. We have unanticipated revenues coming back from out-of-district fire buildings from India for around $170,000, plus or minus, that we've now received. Some of the stuff that is embedded in this budget, quite honestly, has to be bought this year. So that means we're going to have to augment in some of those funds, which means we can reduce portions of this budget. The PPE and the handhelds, we can't wait till July 1st. We're going to have seasonal firefighters before that. So the chief and Hugh, and to whatever level I'm needed, will get involved on that, and we'll finalize what impacts they have on this year, next year's budget, but they will be positive impacts.
Yeah, absolutely. That was part of the problem, too, is the directive I think I've been given is to get these seasonal staff online by May 1st, and that's always where NDF has been. But all of a sudden we kind of went, oh, crud, we don't have any funding for handheld radios, for PPE, for physicals.
Accelerate getting ready for the fire season. And, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, fire season's here.
It's almost year-round anymore.
We're not going to get any more weather, it doesn't look like.
Well, it's wonderful to start a new program and end up saving less money than we were before. It might cost you to, before you order handy talkies and turnouts, make sure that the legislation passes first, right?
That's kind of that balance. There really is no legislation except for the budget.
I thought the governor had to sign up on this.
He has to approve his budget. That's it. There, NRS 472 are the duties and responsibilities of the state forest or fire warden. He's completely within his power and scope of authority to enter into this agreement. The only thing that's pending is the budget approval at the state level. And the hearings that we've been at, I don't see that as being a difficulty. They haven't raised any red flags. Legislators seem to like this program. It's very well supported within fire service.
And if I can jump in again, our discussions with NDF in particular have done if this happens, then this, if that happens, then that. And I understand where you're going with this, but if on the off chance the legislature decides to axe the WFPP out of NDF, the governor's going to sign. It was in his recommended budget. But if it's not passed by the legislature and we can't, you know, get an override done, what NDF has allowed us to do essentially is to hire their seasonals for this next year that would continue to come out of the 473 fund that you approved earlier.
Yeah.
So these employees won't go away on July 1st if it doesn't happen, Marshall. These employees will need the PPE. We're just buying them ahead of time with existing 473 funds.
Out of their existing budget year.
This is another one that NACO strongly supported and is backed by, I think, most, if not all, of the counties in the state. So there's a lot of pressure on the legislature to make sure that this thing gets pushed through, and they're well aware that this is on the governor's budget already and that he's already said, yeah, this is the way. So it's kind of a
it's simply cautioning the chief to, yeah, you know, on the committing resources to something that if it fell through, he doesn't end up you know.
Exactly. They're not going to be in very looks very good in front of the governor if they don't do it.
It's the chicken and egg. I completely agree with you.
I'd say we've got about a 99%.
Yeah, and even if we purchase these things, Commissioner McBride, it'll still be used in the seasonal program if the county's running it or if the Division of Forestry is running it. So it's still needed, and it's in their budget this year.
The problem is if the seasonals are run by NDF, they're not going to be cross-trained for structural attack. Right?
Exactly. Yep. And we are not going to request to purchase structural PPE until this is a done deal. This is only enough wildland PPE to get us online and functioning. That's it. There's no other things in this at all. All the structural stuff would be purchased after July 1. We'll make do and see how much we can beg, borrow, and steal from our neighbors, to be real honest. I talked to Central Lyon County, and they'll let us borrow some stuff through July 1st. So I think we'll be able to outfit these 11 folks.
Good enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You ready to go for 474?
Okay.
except we need to recess and convene as the four seven.
Okay, we're going to recess as county commissioners, and we're going to reconvene as the 474 Board of Fire Commissioners. Shoot.
Great. I'm not real sure where to start, kind of like the sheriff was. You're probably not going to like my budget submittal this year, and I'll start with that. But this was truly, and I think taking the lead from Commissioner Gilman, this is truly a zero balance budget. It truly is, and that's why at the end of this, you're going to see that there is not enough revenue to cover the cost of expenses.
That's kind of a safety valve. If you don't have enough money, you're dead meat.
I know. Should I just stop now? But with that said, this truly is a zero balance budget. I appreciate and respect that approach, and I think we've tried to do that in the past years. In the past years, we've always done a zero balance budget and cut back revenues to match and cut wherever we could between layoffs, salary freezes, those type of things. Just a little background, the 474 Fire Protection District was actually established on June 15, 1964. It was established as an all-risk fire protection district. All-risk meaning that we ran ambulances, that we do hazardous materials incidents, we do technical rescue, we do auto extrications. There's a myriad of other things, but those are the highlights of the all-risk, and that's a differential, I think, between any wildland program, specific program, and a truly all-risk fire district. With that in mind, we run 82% medical calls. 82% of our calls are medical in nature. Our staffing pattern currently is we have a paramedic. We have two personnel in Virginia City. One's a paramedic, one's an EMT intermediate. We have two personnel in the Virginia Highlands. One's a paramedic, one's an EMT intermediate. And we have two personnel in Lockwood. One's a paramedic, one's an intermediate. Now, with that said, when you look at our salaries, one of those paramedics may be a firefighter, one of them may be a captain. We don't differentiate, but one of those are always a paramedic. In 2012, our call volume was 2,164. 2011, in comparison, was 2,175. 2010, 2,189. For all intents and purposes, we run about 2,000 calls a year. Of those calls, that's about 5.92 calls per day. The biggest thing that we have going against us is we don't have a hospital. We have no medical receiving facility within our fire protection district. So what does that mean to us? That means that there's times where we lose our paramedic and firefighter from one of those stations, a minimum of 2 hours and a maximum of 4 hours, and sometimes even longer if there aren't available beds in the hospital. When our staff gets to the hospital, they can't just wheel the patient in and say, here you go. Yeah. We're responsible for that patient until the ER staff takes them from us, signs them out, and finds them a bed. There's times where we've been at hospitals where we've had to send a battalion chief, or I've had to get up at 2 in the morning and go down and rattle cages and say, why have we had an ambulance here for 6 hours? This is not acceptable. But taking that a step further, when that occurs, the Virginia City ambulance is by far the busiest ambulance in the district. The Virginia City ambulance covers Virginia City, Gold Hill, Mark Twain, and if the Highlands ambulance is on a call, it covers the Highlands. We system status our ambulances. So basically what that means to us is if the Virginia City ambulance goes out somewhere on a transport, then we bring in the Virginia City Highlands ambulance, and vice versa. If the Lockwood ambulance goes out on an extended time frame, we take the Highlands ambulance and move it to Lockwood. That's how we cover all of our calls. Generally speaking, we transport somewhere between 500 and 550 patients per year to a medical facility. And we talked about that these people cross-staff. So in Reno, for example, if you're a firefighter, you ride on a fire truck. If you work for RIMSA, you ride on an ambulance. We don't do that. We try to get the biggest bang possible out of our staff. Our staff cross-staffs between a fire engine and an ambulance, or a brush truck, or a hazmat truck, or a ladder truck, or whatever the incident calls for. So with that said, there's times, many times, where we're covering the Highlands, Virginia City, Gold Hill, and Mark Twain with two people because we have people out on transports. How do you work around that? Well, we work around that with volunteer firefighters as much as possible. We work around that with reserve staff as much as possible. That's kind of leading you into what our quandary is currently. Our revenues over the last 5 years.
Jerry, can I ask one quick question?
Please do.
Have you considered, since there's such a large call volume, of subcontracting some of the ambulance service to an independent, and what the cost might be to the county?
You know, we've looked at that over the years, Commissioner Gilman. That's a great question. The problem is it's going to be far more expensive because of the way that we staff. If we contracted that out, we're double duty staff. So it goes up proportionately if you bring in an ambulance service. So now we'd have two firefighters not doing medical transports, and we have two people on an ambulance that we're trying to fund. Would RIMSA come in and do that? Possibly. My discussions with them, and I know that they have a new president now, Jim Googles, but my discussion with them is, we'll do that, but we'll give you one ambulance, and then after that ambulance is gone, you're on your own, or we'll send Care Flight. When we send Care Flight, that's a $10,000 to $15,000 transport fee to our customers. I don't think there is a good answer on trying to subcontract that level of service out. I think the way that we staff and that we cross-staff our personnel, you really can't get any more cost-effective than that.
I was thinking maybe subcontracting for the standby where you are short in an area or station. I don't know.
Oh, no, and I thank you for bringing that in. We kind of do that already. If anybody listens to our calls on scanners, we're in Lyon County all the time. They're in our county all the time. We have very solid working relationships with those folks. So when we frequently run out of ambulances, we go to Central Lyon County first. They'll come in and cover us. If Central Lyon County is not busy, Carson City is our next call. Carson City, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it looks really funny to see an orange and white ambulance up in Virginia City, but there's probably 30 times a year that they're up here covering for us. And vice versa, if they needed that for us, we'd send one down there if we had it. Did that kind of... No, those are great questions, because we've struggled with this for years and years, and cross-staffing really is the most cost-effective system. Fire-based EMS is the most cost-effective system that you can get throughout the country. Going into revenues, we have two primary funding sources, although we have several others, but two primary, and that's ad valorem property taxes and SCCRT sales taxes. Our current fire tax rate is 0.4346, has not changed or been amended at all in at least 7 years. The separate detailed budget that we can go into next, if you'd wish, talks about surrounding fire districts. And what I've done is basically taken all the fire-based EMS systems, ad valorem rates, there's seven of them to compare to, added those all up, and came up with an amortization between all of them. The amortization is 0.65, which is 0.2154 cents lower than where we're at now. Funding from building permits in Town of Virginia over the last 5 years have been completely removed, and I only say that because I'm not asking for those funds. I'm just pointing to where we're having significant revenue shortfalls. That's about $150,000 in 5 years that has been taken from our budget. Probably the biggest landmine that I can point to is I think that we've tried very, very hard to reduce costs and make sure that we have a positive ending fund balance. 5 years ago, our ending fund balance was $444,000. And I'm going to look at Mr. Gallagher a little bit on some of these things, but just to make sure I'm staying on the right track. We're forecasting, I believe, $55,000 as an ending fund balance. We're eroding our ending fund balances to a critical point. I just want to point that out, that that's a considerable landmine. From $450,000 to $50,000 in 5 years is alarming. In the documents that I did give you, there's a chart inside that, and that shows you exactly what we've dropped in revenues over the past 5 years. We've decreased in revenues over the past 5 years a total of $756,000, actually $756,147.23. So what does that mean to us? We had to go out and try to find additional revenue resources to survive this downturn in the economy. And I think we've been somewhat successful at that. We've started charging for special event services. That creates another $8,500 a year. Wildland shared station costs, where Division of Forestry, 3-5 years ago, never paid a dime to be in our buildings. We started to charge them for shared station costs. This year, that creates $48,600. And ambulance billings have been all over the board, but we're still $60,000 higher than we were 5 years ago. And I think the most notable thing that we've tried to do is we've tried to institute programs such as the Dozer program, which is creating last year $230,000, and we anticipate another $230,000. If we hadn't done all that, coupled with our decreasing revenues, we're down $983,000 roughly over the last 5 years. That kind of gets into our expenses. Over the past 5 years, we have tried every control measure that we can think of. We've frozen salaries for the past 4 years for fire union members, just releasing that in this new contract. Along with that, all of our chief officers are still in salary freezes going to a fifth year, and we're okay with that. We're not complaining. We've closed down the Tahoe Reno Industrial Complex fire station, which was 6 personnel that we riffed, which is very hard, still provide that level of service. We've gotten rid of 2 division chiefs. We've consolidated the Mark Twain Fire Station and the Central Lyon County Fire Station down there, again, trying to reduce costs wherever possible. And we've reduced line items wherever and whenever possible. One thing that's, I think, significant to note, too, and again, this is just it-is-what-it-is type information, but in fiscal year 2010-11, we hit that threshold to start paying back Tahoe Reno Industrial through the agreement. Prior to that 2010-11 fiscal year, we didn't pay anything into the payback system. Starting in that year, we paid back, I believe, $233,000. And through the drop in ad valorem rates, now we're paying $208,000. So that's another line item expense in this standalone budget that we've been hit with. And I'm just pointing that out because I'm not complaining about it. It's a legitimate and true cost. That's another $200,000 that we've reduced technically in our expense, our revenues, and therefore added as an expense. Our budget request for 2013-14 is $3,461,818. If you were to remove that tri-expense, which I'm not advocating, if you look at legitimate what it costs to operate, we're requesting $3,253,818. Our drop in expenses over the last 5 years has been $446,000. And we're forced with what seems to be unstoppable and continual unfunded mandates. And just to name a few of those is health insurance increases, PERS increases, Medicare increases, workers' compensation increases, OSHA mandates for respiratory protection. I know I think I've talked to all the commissioners about this. It's almost ironic. We have to buy a PPP extrication washing machine. That one item is $8,500. We have to do respiratory protection fit testing every year. But, of course, that fit testing machine is another $2,500, and after that purchase, it's $500 a year to calibrate. These are all unfunded mandates, out of our control. In closing, our staffing pattern right now is tight. By state law, we have to have 2 people on an ambulance to operate it. If we reduce any staffing, we'll close down effectively an entire ambulance in one of our communities. And I don't mean that melodramatic, I mean that as factual. In my opinion, there's 3 essential options that can occur. Our year-end fund balances will come in higher than what we anticipated. That would be a godsend, and actually there may be a 4th. We may have a possible higher increase in ad valorem rates than what we anticipated in the budget. Another option is a small adjustment to the ad valorem tax rate. And I think the final, and I hope this would be everybody's opinion, is the final option would be to RIF. And if we RIF, we close down an ambulance. With that said, I'd be happy to go back into Well, and I think there's another important point. In the 2013-14 budget request, we were able to trim another $71,891.48. So we're $80,000 going into the next fiscal year request than we were this fiscal year. And I would love to say that that was because we found somewhere that we could cut, and it's not. It's purely and strictly because of two things. We've lost seven employees that were topped out level, and we replaced them with step ones. The second thing that we did that I think was critically important was we, in our contract negotiations, we rewrote our health insurance program. That saved us approximately $60,000 because now we're not covering spouses. So those two items is why we were able to reduce by $71,000. Any questions at this point? And then I'd, if it's the board's wish, I'd go into line items.
Pretty much it is what it is.
Good,
okay. Chairman, I'd like to chime in.
Go ahead.
On the side here, please. What do you think that sentence has ad valorem is going to increase?
Unabated, with the state taxation numbers, it would increase $75,000. Oh. Out of the unabated rates?
Just to figure it out, the guy, I concurred with taxation today, and it's about 60.
60 abated, though. 60 actual. No, what I was saying was 75,000 unabated. And I made big bold notes that this is unabated forecast with the first set of numbers from state taxation.
Chief Ames, right now, year to date, I think, is sitting at about 231,000 to the good on his budget, which doesn't make the ending fund balance for this fiscal year look that bad. I anticipate for this fiscal year end, 2014, that there's going to be some unanticipated expenditures that will be decreased, and therefore he will have a positive ending fund balance at the end for the budget period ending 2014. That being said, we will, after the legislative session is over, contract with Mary Walker and Associates, who took White Pine County through the process of making them a separate, their fire district. And so consequently, I think that that is a good point to take, because as of July 1, 2014, if the chief wants to go down that road, we certainly have a separate rate of ad valorem, which you guys will be then the board again still. But it gives us and gives Gary some leeway as far as what the ad valorem rate is going to be. Okay? That's where I'd like it.
And I appreciate that, because that's never a popular subject. I live here and I pay taxes here as well, so I'm just trying to lay it out with a zero balance budget to say there's some landmines here. There's some definite landmines.
I really don't believe that taxation is an alternative we should consider. I think we've got to look at everything else. Okay. Going back to the folks in this recession and where we are, and with the budgets we have for all of our union contracts and all, I just wouldn't be comfortable talking about raising taxes.
This option is not going to be, would eliminate raising taxes for this fiscal year. What would happen is there would be a study come in and say that based upon the values of the entire county now, this is what the recommended tax rate will be. And then it will be up to you guys to either say yay or nay.
This would be if we effectuate the plan that you had in mind, right, for July 14th.
If we are going down the road at least to explore, and I agree with everybody on this one, to explore Gary being a separate local government, I think that is an option we should at least take forward and see where the others go.
And I appreciate that, Commissioner Gilman. That's why I'm here, is to have you set the policy and directive for me to follow?
Well, I have the numbers, you know, we can't hurt money. That's not, we don't want to tax our residents either.
Well, okay, and the thing else, let's see. Is fire emergency under 474, are we back to?
Fire emergency is its own separate fund.
And are we, it's really integral to 474, is it not, Chief?
It is.
I would suggest this would be a fire protection board budget, because it is exclusive to 474 operations.
Yeah, I think it was established by the Board of Commissioners.
That doesn't mean we can't change. I would suggest take this one as a 474, since it's used part and parcel as a 474 operation. And then the rest will be, I'm not sure about mutual aid. I think mutual aid might be too, because that's out of district dollars, correct?
Yes.
I would say the next two are still 474 board matters.
Did you want me to hit on line items? Or I think I was pretty detailed in this. I'm sure that you guys have looked at it. But if you'd like.
No, I'm good too.
So 035 next?
Yes.
035 was an interesting fund. We started this fund before we had to put money back in as revenues to support the 474 Fire Protection District. This was all established by off-county fire responses. Every time we go on an off-district assignment, we take that money back, any revenues for equipment charges, and establish this 035 Fire Emergency Fund. This has been 100% supported by that funding source in the past. And when you look at these, the expense side of it, we have to put something into expenses. We don't anticipate using these, but it's a pass-through. So if we go and spend $10,000, which has been changed somewhat now because now we have the automatic aid fund, but previously if we spent $10,000 on an off-county fire response, it was paid for out of this fund and then reimbursed when the money came back in. But these expenses that you see here are really just pass-through. I don't anticipate spending these, but if we have a large fire and we need these, they have to be budgeted expenses to revenues.
By the way, Gary, I'd like to add, in going through in your line item expense along with your explanation, absolutely excellent, 100%.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for that. Easy to read, easy to understand.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thanks for your doing.
So you're kind of approving to expend funds that we have no idea if we're ever going to expend. And ideally, we won't touch these funds. But if you don't have an expense, then we get kind of dinged in the budget.
I'd still like you to go back with you, go over all the line items and look very carefully before you get massage them. I'm not going to give up on that.
Hugh and I, yeah, we have spent.
We've been doing that quite a bit.
Yeah, we got to look at it one more time. Might be something.
I know.
I'm missing something. I think if I've missed it, Hugh's missed it as well. And I think the unsung hero in the room, too, is Jesse Thain. And Jesse's looked at every one of these numbers as well. And I just don't see anywhere else to cut. I mean, we've cut cell phones and ambulances. We've cut.
I can't blame you, but every once in a while, you know, there's a Easter egg account.
I would love to find a big old Easter egg in there. That would be very nice.
We could use it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Especially in this fund.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, one thing we will have between now and May 2nd is we will have two more months of activity on the Dodger side. We will have March. The March dates will be out probably by the 15th of this month. And May can't publish May before the 20th date, but we will probably get a pretty good indication of what our voucher commitments are, at least for May, which will only leave 1 month sitting out there. So we will have, hopefully, the expense side of this pretty well done, barring any stuff.
Yeah, that's watch the overtime go down.
Pardon?
Watch the overtime go down, and it can solve a lot of the whole problem. without the OT, and it's amazing what happens, bottom line.
When we cut quite a few hours of overtime, if you and I arm wrestled over that one, the problem with overtime for us is our guys can't come to work if they have a fever. We commonly deal with terminal cancer patients. We deal with people with very serious health issues. If we have a fever, we cannot be around those patients. So our and it drives me nuts, but our sick leave overtime is very high, and I don't know a way around that. If we don't have one person on, we shut down an ambulance for the day, so we have to backfill those. But again, if they're sick, they cannot be on the line treating these significant medical patients.
Well, that's where you could use the outsource service.
Well, and we have a reserve program. We're trying to use reserves to fill those positions. I think we've talked about this at previous board meetings, and there is going to be, in the next 2 years, a huge, huge void for paramedic firefighters. In our budget, that is one thing that we requested, was to send firefighter, EMT, intermediate to paramedic school. I don't know where these folks are going to come from. We're not producing them fast enough to meet the demands of the fire service. So within our reserve program, we started with 4 paramedics and 4 EMT intermediates. We're down to 1 paramedic in that now. They've either gotten hired somewhere or been sucked in by RIMSA, or they're just not there to hire. So that's very concerning. When we try to do the right thing, we try to use reserves to cover overtime, our reserves are getting hired like hotcakes. We can't keep track of them. We started with 8, and we're down to 4 now, which Austin doesn't like because that's all that HR time that he spent to get him going, and now they're with another agency. So do we move to 035?
So I think then...
One more. 045 is, again, integrated in. This is mutual aid. So this would be part of the fire protection district.
Yeah. This was something that was actually the brainchild of our comptroller and was really quite genius. We've never had a dedicated fund that when we go off on out-of-county fire assignments, we're paying for all that out of our standard 474 operations funds. So when you see some of our stuff come in at the end of the year, it seems very inflated. And I appreciate Commissioner Gilman's comments earlier, but I can tell you that a lot of those costs for overtime are directly attributed to off-district fire assignments that we're not paying. We bill those back, and then...
That's a recapture.
That's a recapture. That's exactly right. But what the comptroller came up with is a separate fund so I could track everything that comes in and everything that goes out for off-district fire assignments. We were trying to do it with spreadsheets, a very tedious process, very difficult to follow. Now every time we go on an off-district assignment, it'll all be ran through this one fund. So if we never go, this fund will never be used. If we go, this fund will be used. And this is all outside money coming in to support this fund.
Do I understand if this fund is managed by the county manager?
I think it's managed by me. I think it's overseen by the comptroller, but all the money that comes in and goes out is really in accordance to our fire billings.
Mr. Gilman, the chief will be the one that he will set, he sends the, if there's an incident somewhere outside Story County, all of his resource people will be, for example, all the overtime for that staff that head out there on their payroll sheets. It will be coded to this mutual aid program. Okay. All the callbacks, all the anything attributed to this fire because you can bill out of this fire, will then be attributed to that. We will then we pay the payroll, we pay the vouchers for the gas and all that stuff, and then when the chief bills. That particular fire through
BLM Forest Service, whoever the.
And that revenue will come in, and we will know by incident what the revenue is and the cost.
So is this a revenue building fund, or is it basically a zero fund?
Revenue building fund. I would like to see, I know that, and there's a stipulation in there that as of March, we can transfer funds from this particular fund, I believe, to the fire fund. However, I throw air caution to the air here, because at some point in time, he's going to have to replace equipment, which is transports, trailer, dozers, whatever it may be. I'd like to see a fund balance in there before we do that. And I think, and I really believe that because of this, the fire fund that Gary manages will be helping anyway.
I agree, because we never look healthy. We get dinged in the audit every single year because we're paying all these off-district responses on the front end and then waiting 4 to 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, and it spans 2 fiscal years. So we always, always get dinged in the budget, in the audit reports.
I'm always in the mood to watch funds and where they go, and my curiosity, I guess, is once you fill this fund up, and I'm sure you will, is there's oversight. I understand that you have the authority to manage it, but if it comes before the commissioners or your county manager, or you know how those funds are adjudicated.
At the end of the day, it's really up to this board of fire commissioners and county commissioners to say, yes, you can transfer those funds, or no, you cannot, because it's done through augmentations, and you have to approve all, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just a case in point on this is, Ms. Houts asked us about our equipment maintenance dollars. We're way over on equipment maintenance, but it's misleading because a lot of that equipment maintenance, and I'll give you just a specific case in point, one of our fire trucks was out on a fire assignment in San Bernardino County. Transfer case came apart, had to have it towed, had to have it repaired, $12,000 in repairs and maintenance. That was all put back to that fire. But when you look at the 030 fund, if you don't know that, you think that we've just been like drunken sailors, and we haven't. All this money comes back in to cover those overages on each line item. So this will get rid of all of those issues. When we had to go through for auto maintenance and calculating for next year's off a zero balance budget, we had to go through literally and cross off everything that was a fire assignment, everything that had to do with dozer operations, because we don't, our rule is the dozers will either be zero cost or they will make money. And we've built that entire fleet of dozers off of only fire assignment dollars. Not one penny has come from the fire fund to support that program. The shop doesn't maintain those dozers. We pay for outside contract mechanics to come in and do that. So not one penny comes from the fire district's operating budget. And this will be much, much cleaner, and I really appreciate what the comptroller has done for this. Any questions on that one?
Okay.
This would be the time, then, Mr. Chairman, to entertain a motion to approve the tentative budgets for fire emergency, and mutual aid.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Sure. This time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we approve. Repeat that for me one more time, Mr.
The tentative budgets for tentative fire for the Fire Protection District 474 fire emergency and mutual aid.
Okay. As read into the record.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second?
Of course. Okay. I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. And then, Mr. Chairman, before you adjourn, we respectfully ask, you have approved the interlocal agreement as a Board of Commissioners and as a 473 Board of Commissioners potentially, but not as a 474 Board of Commissioners, so we'd ask you to visit item 32.
Yeah, we need to get item 32 then, a motion for approval on.
Did you convene as a 474?
This is as a 474 board.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, move for approval of item 32, approval of Story County interlocal agreement between Story County and the State of Nevada.
Okay.
I'll second motion.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so we've got that.
You're number 35, Mr. Chairman, with numbers 36 and 37 already done.
We've got those done, so we need to.
We can continue on with the budget.
Do you, Do you have a six, or come back?
Recess then as 474 board.
You can adjourn as 474, actually, we're done.
Adjourn as 470, yeah, because I guess we're done with that. So we'll adjourn, and we'll reconvene as the Story County Board of Commissioners, and back to our item 35, our tentative budget hearings.
It's the equipment acquisition part.
Yep.
Who's going for it, is that Gary?
And what's up next?
Equipment acquisition, Mr. Chairman. You have an equipment acquisition fund?
Yep. What do you want to buy?
Well, the equipment acquisition fund is a shared fund amongst several departments, and our portion of that request this year is, the last 11 years, we've had a lease purchase payment for the Type 2 brush engines. That was paid this current fiscal year. In the interim, we've had some very difficult problems with our water tenders. All of our water tenders were purchased as used NDOT snowplow trucks. There's not a single water tender that has less than 230,000 miles on it. They're showing their age. The shop is nonstop working on these. We have one broken down now that has been broken down for 4 months. Although they would diligently work on it, it's just a very old piece of equipment. So in a nutshell, what we propose is to roll that same amount, and actually, we increased by $10,000, to $159,000 request to refurbish three water tenders. The Virginia Highlands water tender, we were able to get quotes for a chassis changeover. Basically, the cabin chassis are just, I don't know how else to put it, but junk. They're just falling apart. Everything from the back is still workable. The tanks are good, they're stainless steel tanks, which we invested significantly in early on. The pumps are still good, so what we're requesting is to take that off, put that onto another cabin chassis. The other cabin chassis we're looking at is through federal excess for the Highland water tender. That used chassis, it's convoluted, but basically, we need to take a federal excess truck that we're using for our bulldozer program, use that as a cabin chassis for a water tender, and use $20,000 to replace that one that we stole from the dozer program. So that's the Highland water tender. The total cost for refurbishing of that is $62,753.89. The Mark Twain water tender, the chassis changeover is $43,749.17. That one's a little bit higher because the GPM pump on our original water tenders were only $250. On structural firefighting, we have to have a minimum of 500 GPM, or the blows just, the math doesn't work. We've got to upgrade that to a 500 GPM pump. We have to extend the chassis frame, and then we'll use one of our federal excess cabin chassis, which is no charge, and the total for that one is $51,249.17. The Lockwood water tender, the chassis changeover cost is $38,000. We have to extend the frames on the cabin chassis that we received from federal excess at $25 a piece for a total cost of $45,531.79.
And then additionally in this fund, we also provide for a transfer to the road fund to the payments on equipment previously approved under a lease. So this is a multi-agency fund that has access to it.
Yeah, and this is, I know this isn't the same board, but the previous board, that was always the game plan, was to pay the Type 2 engines off, roll that in to accomplish what we needed to do. And I have a second request, if you don't have any questions on the water tenders.
Expensive toys.
They'd be much more expensive if we didn't get the federal excess cabin chassis for $25.
Well, we certainly knew about this.
I'm fine with it, Mr. Chairman. I have a problem with that.
Any questions on any of that?
Not at this point.
Yeah, it's just, again, it is what it is.
And I do have a second request that I'd like to tag on with this is, it's not necessarily for any funding this fiscal year, but it is permission to go out to seek bids for specifications that we've written over the last 18 months to replace 3 Type 1 structure fire engines. I can come back to the board with all of that particular information on our existing fleet. We're in the same scenario. They recommend that you can't run those more than 15 years, and we're at 20 to 23 years, respectively, on those pieces of equipment. But we would respectfully request that you allow us to go out to bid on these. And obviously, before any bids were awarded or anything, we could get some costs, look at some short-term financing, and that would all be brought back to you. But without...
Based on our budget position right now, where we are, I think you have to do that. We're going to have to approach this cautiously and understand what your capabilities are today without. And a good expenditure facing the budget we're facing them this year.
Yeah, and this would not be a request to even begin a short-term lease purchase for these until the next year. But without sending these out to bid, we don't know what the costs are going to be. And that's what I would request, is that you allow us to at least send this out to bid, get some costs back, and then to work with this board and the comptroller to see what
the
fees
are. Looking for the board to approve this evening your authorization to go get the bids? Is that what I'm understanding?
Only for bids.
Only for bid purposes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's fine. If these are meeting term lease purchases for 3 structure units, refurbished or not, I'm pretty sure that's going to be a fair amount. We've got some work to do.
Yeah.
But we'll get it done.
Yeah, I anticipate that it'll be the same thing as the Type 2 engines, to be honest. I'm not going to ask for more funding. We'll make it the terms of the lease purchase accommodate to the number of funding that's available currently and not ask for any additional funding. But without knowing what the costs of them are, I can't come to you with a reasonable selling point to say this is what the costs are. We would recommend this number of term in years. I just don't have those numbers. So the first step would be just to get bids so I can come back to the board and say this is what the costs are.
Chairman, I think what I'd like to see, not only from the chief, but also from Mike down there on heavy equipment as far as, you know, these plows, loaders, whatever it is, if we can get a list of what they think that's their expenditures are going to be for that, plus what they think the time of the time that they want to start operating, at least we can get a good idea, take a look and see what our outlay is for the next 1, 2, 3 fiscal years.
Yeah. That's part of the problem with the structure engines. Even once we get the bids back and we figure out how we're going to eat this elephant, it takes a full year minimum to even get those delivered. I mean, if I signed a purchase order, I'm not going to, but if I signed a purchase order today, it wouldn't be for another year minimum that we'd even see those delivered. So it's a long, tedious process to get those even ordered. But this is the first step in that process.
Okay.
Thank you for your time, and
thank you.
I'm not making it quite so painful.
Yes, Chief. Thank you for coming in on your season off and giving your report today.
Yeah, I got to get you and Jerry to quit driving your cars so much. You guys keep wearing all this stuff out. Just shine them up and park them someplace.
Mr. Chairman, the next several budgets are a combination of budgets that are administered through your offices by either me or staff. I intend to go over the next 3 specifically, defer to planning since we've integrated planning into the administrative officer function under Austin. Austin will present planning, and then between Mr. Gallagher and I, we can slug our way through the remaining ones that we did not do narratives for because they're pretty much either unfunded mandates or blank pieces of paper so far. The first budget I'd like to review is the commission budget itself. Typically, our office really has 2 primary departments or budgets that we work from, the commissioners and the administrative. What we try to do is focus items affiliated with the commission office generally more directly toward the functions of the commissioners as a whole, and then the administrative I'll refer to in a moment as probably more like your kitchen catch-all drawer. Most of the things that come out of here, again, are directly related to your office. In terms of salary and benefits, we apportion back and forth a couple of our salaries, for instance, in the commission budget. All three of your salaries come directly out of there. The good news is with the elimination of Commissioner Hess and Commissioner Kershaw, and the fact that Commissioner Chauvagan is now entering his third year, we have no longevity for two more years, and we'll enter that on the fifth year, assuming you'll run again and assuming you'll be reelected. So there's been a drop there. You also pay 100% of my salary, although we could allocate some to administrative, but we don't. We do allocate 20% of our administrative officer's salary to the commission office in support of the commission, 80% of our management analyst. And this was a little deceiving. We expense, because we pay it, 100% of our government affairs director, but it's important to note that also embedded in the general fund revenues is the 50% back the school district reimburses us after we pay for him. So those are, it's going to look like we're paying more than we are net, because we pay his full salary. He's an employee of the county, and then the school district reimburses us for half. Given all that, with increases in PERS and picking up 100% of the government affairs, like I said, at least on paper, we did increase salary and benefits by 5.6% total. Office supplies, we decreased by $500. Again, we decreased by $1,500, excuse me, because with Jesse's tenure here, we're trying to go paperless as much as we can. Almost none of you receive budget packets anymore. Some of the staff officers are whining about it, but they can print them off the web. So that's a $1,500 savings and a whole forest someday. Telephone, again, we allocate back and forth between administrative functions and commissioners. That's at $2,000. We did increase travel by $2,000 this year, and quite frankly, that's because with a whole new board, essentially, given Chairman Chauvagan's tenure, but now leadership, you know, it's exciting to say we've got a board that wants to get out there and make things happen themselves. That'll mean going to potentially national NACO conferences. As you all know, we just got back from Washington, D.C. for the National NACO Legislative Conference. Very productive, I believe. So that budget has been bumped to about $9,000. Dues and subscriptions, we look at those each year and felt like there's a couple that, you know, we just don't do, so we cut that by 100 down to 500. Rents, leases, and purchases. We basically have, I'll admit it because it's been asked before, we have a copier that we work the living daylights out of. But that's so we can give you either the paper that's in front of you or scan the items that are in front of you and deal with the massive volumes of that. So this is an allocated part of that copier that probably someday I'm going to nail Mr. Osborne as well for, now that planning's generating even more on that machine. Training, again, similar to travel with new commissioners attending budgets. It's not only a matter of traveling to them, it's registering for conferences such as NACO. Auto maintenance, our cars are beginning to age a little bit. They're still very serviceable and will be for many more years. But this is for items, as Mr. Nevin indicated earlier when we went through service. This is one that we just flat out, sometimes we need parts. Both our cars, as I've warned Mr. Gilman, and mine, for anybody that drives mine, have a very inherent flaw that Mike worked on for months and months with Steve Fate. And finally, General Motors Detroit just said, tough luck, it's a flaw that we know of and there's nothing you can do. But so gas and diesel, we increased, our narrative says, by the new commissioner, he's up here a whole lot more, attending meetings and participating with us, and we applaud that. Tires, we might not be able to make this until this next year, but last I knew, Commissioner Gilman's car, I believe, was running on bare tread just about. I don't know if we got those fixed lamps or not. If we did, This one, I'll take a look at the tires on the car that is assigned to me and shared by everybody. We'll look at that. We might be able to soften that one. And economic development is probably the newest big one. We have kind of a whole new outlook, and this is, again, commissioners, plural, that participate in economic development. I had the benefit of going to an EDON dinner reception probably 4 months ago, I think, that I know Commissioner Gilman, Commissioner Bryan, Commissioner Chevangin, we're all at. So this kind of covers for those efforts and gives us a pot of money to be able to use in that critical function. Computer equipment, we bumped by about $800. Again, as I mentioned when I presented IT for James Dean, we're getting probably anywhere from 3 to 5 years of life out of our computers for the heavy usage they are. I'm getting what IT refers to more and more frequently as the blue screen of death. Apparently that's a nasty thing when you turn it on, that it says, I don't like what happened to me since the last time you worked with me. So that one may need to be replaced, although again, James will certainly try every trick in the book to make it last. And we bumped miscellaneous a little bit from $350 to $500. Those are just uncategorized budgets, very small overall. Total budget, we are asking for your consideration, moved upwards from $505,000 to $534,000, or just under 6%. And I stand available for questions if you have any on your budget.
Well, our budget's perfect.
Any questions? Well, I didn't take the health insurance. I used my own cell phone.
And that all, believe me, that helps tremendously. That really does. You can't imagine on both of us. I converted my cell phone to personal use earlier this year for the same reason. I'm not carrying two phones, as I think someone else mentioned earlier today, and I'll just pay for mine and somehow figure out a way to write it off on my personal taxes. May I move on then to administrative, Mr. Comptroller and Mr. Chairman? Okay, administrative budget, this is, as I mentioned, this is the big one in the general, in addition, of course, to the sheriff's fund. This is a $2 million budget, but I'm pleased to tell you that it has decreased because of various moves we've made this year. It's decreased in proposal from $2,064,000 down to $2,010,000, so $55,000, $54,000 cut off, a decrease of over 5%. And I'm not going to say the fund, this is the department, the division of the general fund that really pays for the things that we have not been able to fine-tune and allocate out. When you get an insurance policy, for instance, an annual billing for our pool liability insurance in excess of $300,000, you wind up actually $375,000, close to $400,000. You wind up really creating more work by going through and saying, we're going to allocate this to the sheriff's office for his. We're going to allocate this for somebody else. We are looking, particularly with local government entities, potentially like the 474 Fire District. The comptroller and I are working on ways that we can allocate out some of those portions. But in essence, our NACO membership covers the entire county. Our insurance policies. So that is kind of how this is used. We do provide for it in our salaries and benefits. In essence, the opposite of what I mentioned on both the management analyst, I believe that's 20%, and the inverse for the administrative officer. And then key in here is we do have one member on staff that Dean complimented earlier in the presentation. We have Susan Breilinger, who we stole from the clerk's office about 3 years ago over her protests, and really put her to work to help us out in multiple offices at the same time for either unanticipated absences, quick terminations, and oftentimes even on projects. For instance, as Dean mentioned during the commission meeting today, we had a death, in our family, which we honestly think, one of our employees' mothers is certainly family. She died back east, so we needed to put Susan over there to save the day in building department for a while. So Susan's entire salary is embedded in here, and we do not charge or cost her out to the various units. Operational expenses, What we have done, actually, is this is down a bunch. This is down $16,000, because as we can, through Hugh's efforts and Jesse's, subject to a lot of arm twisting to me, we try to allocate out these costs when we can. And Vanessa's got the best postage machine around. We all don't mind walking upstairs to put on a postage meter. And what we found this past year is it's got the capability of securely saying, this was done to Dean's office, this was done in the fire department, this was done in ours, in the assessor's office, which is a very big user. So we're able to pinpoint those costs. So we have distributed those and allocated those. So for every one of those individuals that have stood up here today and said, my postage went up because the commissioner's office said we had to, because Jesse said we had to, because Jesse said Pat said we had to, it really, I blame Hugh for it. But what we have done is taken out of the administrative budget a corresponding amount. So it's pretty much all out of the general fund, although not always. Our office supplies, again, applaud Jesse's efforts to go paperless. It's a reduction of $1,000. Telephone, again, we're actually increasing on this one versus the commissioners. We're just kind of cost allocating back and forth how the phones may or may not be used. This one, since it does not involve the commissioners, we did not really change travel much. A lot of Austin's travel can still be worked through planning, but we are looking at particularly some human resource travel for him, about on the same level as Holly was before. Some general accounting work in conjunction with Hugh for Jesse, and Health and Human Services, which I'll discuss later on, which again still falls under Austin's responsibilities together with Susan when she is in our office. Dues and subscriptions, this is for a variety of items, including, ironically, it covers the county anytime we're playing any type of music in any of our facilities, so that the fine folks from the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, I'll just say ASCAP, I'm sure there's a different pronunciation, but those guys can't come in and claim trademark infringements or anything. So that protects us there. We did not change the equipment maintenance. That is specifically for the maintenance agreement on the courthouse elevator. Utilities, this has been moved over to buildings and grounds, and again, we zeroed it down under our budget. Rents, leases, and purchases, again, using the postage machine in Vanessa's office and paying our fair share has allowed us to decrease this function by about $5,000. Communications, this is a cost affiliated with the Government Affairs Director's office adjacent to Cafe Del Rio, and we did decrease that $1,500. Training, we did not change. That's $5,000, again, primarily focused on human resources, government accounting, and health and HHS, Health and Human Services. Auto maintenance, no changes, left at $1,000 to kind of cover the differences between particularly my pool vehicle versus Commissioner Gilman's. Bank charges, again, as Vanessa indicated earlier, we moved all $10,000 out of this account and moved it over to the treasurer's portion of the clerk's office. Records management, we do some off-site records retention, and most importantly right now, most of this would be, and it's very, very small, was it 250, we're down to 150. The bulk of this, I believe, is actually the, they come in and shred our more sensitive documents, and they go to recycle. So that's a minimal expense. Economic development, we actually decreased and moved it over to the commission budget, and we weren't using it as effectively here anyway. And by the way, if you wish, and Lance, I'll be looking for you specifically on this, but all of you for guidance, we did take it out of here at $10,000. We put in $7,500 because we felt that was a more accurate assessment as how it might be used. But if you feel that does need to be bumped, we can certainly be aware of that and work with that. So, public notices, again, particularly with some of Janice Seddon's offers and abilities, these really cover all the legal ads. We're hopeful we can continue to control our prices. We're trying to batch our ordinances as much as we can so that we don't have to have all these expensive ads in the legal paper of record. We did reduce that by $1,000. Professional services, this covers our outside lobbyists, not our director of government affairs. drug testing services countywide. The countywide software support for the AS400, the accounting, and our social media efforts, which includes our contract with RKPR and any costs associated with the Board of Equalization. That has not changed. We're asking for the same amount as the current year. Technical IT services, this has reduced as we bring more stuff in-house. This is though we still need to contract out for a website firewall, and we'll need to even when we bring that internally, and then virus needs and spam protection on our emails. Furniture and fixtures, there was no change to this item because we opted to indicate we've got some minor modifications we want to make to a remote office in the courthouse in terms of soundproofing and whatnot, so that's to provide for that. Web design, again, we've decreased that by $2,500 down to $7,500. We are currently off-site with this. We know we can bring it in and save substantial monies eventually. It's just going to be a year of transition. These are the countywide dues for the following organizations: NACO, Western Nevada Development District, Economic Development Authority of Western Nevada, and Northern Nevada Development Authority. Sum total, those come out to be $25,000. Legal printing, particularly every legislative session, once they codify all the NRS changes and everything, we've got to go out and get printed pages. Even though this stuff is online, we've got to get printed pages for some of the hard copy volumes that we keep in various offices. Well, I believe you've got a set in Vanessa's and a set in Hughes last time, you know, and a set in here. Wildlife management, we eliminated it. Nobody's ever asked us for money, and there seemed to be little need to have it. Youth services agreement is an interesting one, and this is not dictated by us. It did increase this year in the estimates based on our usage of juvenile facilities at the what's called WINREC, the Western Nevada Regional Youth Center in Silver Springs, and also the China Springs facility. And this is generally offset by a slight increase or decrease based on these estimates in the overall tax rate. That's why you'll see that tax rate fluctuating from a 643 to a 645 to a 641 back and forth based on these estimates. So it pretty much is an unfunded mandate. Carson Truckee Water Conservation District, this is a taxation estimate. We decreased it by $275 based on their suggestions. $5,000 for capital outlay. Again, these are just items that you really cannot foresee at any time. We are very judicious, and right now, to be honest with you, out of the administrative budget, I don't know of a single capital outlay item we could really pin our hat on and say this is what we're going to do. Computer equipment, as we've mentioned before, even though we can sometimes get 3 to 5 years, Microsoft has got the best racket on planet Earth when they look at operating systems. And pretty soon you find out that they're no longer supporting Windows Vista or XP. They've got to move you on to the latest and greatest. And oftentimes our computers just simply will not take the new programs or won't take the new operating systems that are required to run the new programs. So we have provided for updates on one computer and a cleanup of current system failures on another. Safety Fund, this is, I mentioned Shannon Garner earlier and his efforts. It's a great organization. We have, you all in the past anyway, have pretty much mandated that every department participate in this. And between Shannon and Vanessa, the leadership they provide, I go and I have a blast. But this is about $2,000 set aside in this budget. So when the safety committee says, you know, we need all new pads on the, I can't remember what an AED is, and Gary left the defibrillators, those suckers out there. We need all new pads because, again, it's not that they get used, it's that they're only good for X number of years or new batteries. We fund the safety committee. I believe the safety committee will be considering at its next meeting consideration of also helping with the every 15-minute program. It's that vital of a program to support. Commissary really allows us to keep, you know, water and coffee in the office when we host meetings, pretty much. The staff buys its own coffee or contributes toward it. And then every so often, you know, will help make a contribution to buy meat at the annual 4th of July barbecue that the fire department puts on. Small things like that is $1,000. The insurance premium is a swag right now. As Hugh said, they haven't decided what the rates are going to be on our liability insurance through the pool. They, by the way, include Mr. Gallagher and me, who are your pool representatives. We'll be spending 2 fun field days at the John Scoggin Nugget at the end of April, listening to actuarial reports and claims management and Lloyd's of London people on what's going to happen with the rates. The only thing I will tell you is the good news about being in an insurance pool is the myriad of local governments that are eligible and participate in the pool, we're all in the same boat. We're all under revenue crunches. None of us want to see high increases. I would tell you, knock on wood, our claims experience this year, again, has been outstanding. We did have one fire truck issue that Gary referred to earlier. But for the most part, we've done exceptionally well in our claims risk management. We did several years ago raise our deductible from $500 to $5,000. And when we put that out there, each department is responsible for their own deductibles. And that certainly brought a new level of sensitivity and awareness as to how to protect assets. Insurance deductible, we carry one $5,000 provision in there. And again, knock on wood, we have not needed it so far. But with Mr. Gilman driving, you never know. So. Settlement reserve, we did decrease this by $50,000. Oftentimes, in the nature of dealing both with our insurance company and our district attorney, we find it necessary to pay what, you know, Mr. Maddox probably has a better term, but I would call it nuisance money. Sometimes we may be able to settle for $4,000 on something that is going to cost us $40,000 to litigate. These are items that oftentimes the insurance company will cover our legal costs, not Mr. Maddox's, but Brinkel Vets and the insurance pools, but they will not necessarily cover settlement costs. So this is a provision in there, and it's getting down to bare bones at $25,000. It used to be $100,000, I believe, years ago. And also this fund is where we kind of collect everything from the general and send it wherever else you've asked. So we're down to 2. We still feel it important for the general fund to support roads until we can at least find funding stability for the roads, because there just isn't enough. So there's a provision for $200,000 out of the $2 million to go to roads. And then over the last several years under Mr. Gallagher's leadership, even before we actually crossed the threshold of our payback obligations on TRI, we actually started reserving hard money, not just making entries into the general fund that evaporated every year. We'll get to the tri-payback, but somehow you have to have a line item to get some money from the general over to the tri-fund, so it's locked up there. And in this case, we're estimating obligations to tri at around $812,700. So this is there. So all told, this budget has moved, requested, from $2,064,000 to $2,010,000, of which literally over $2.8 million are just in those two transfers alone, $800,000 to try, $200,000 to roads, and that is your administrative budget.
Okay,
yes, sir.
The last two transfer funds, I suppose, require permission from the state.
Through the budgeting process, absolutely. For instance, you know, when we do a tri-payback, Commissioner Gilman, what we do is we will have the independent audit that is performed by Cone Calodney done. Those identify obligations due. With the help of tri's attorney, Bob Sater, we will prepare vouchers, retire those vouchers in order as we've accepted the roads. So definitely oversight there. I would answer the question on the transfer of roads slightly different. This is a capital infusion, if you will, into the roads budget. And then once that's approved and done, we typically do it on a quarterly basis. And under that program, it's generally up to your roads director, Mike Nevin in this case, to execute either according to the plan that was in the budget or based on emerging priorities.
Would there be a notification to the commission that monies were transferred?
Absolutely, yes, sir. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, this one's quite a bit simpler. This is, in the last legislative session, this is Health and Human Services, Department 114. In the last legislative session, it was referred to bluntly as the shift in the shaft. This is where the state said, we don't have enough money, so you're going to start paying for stuff, like consumer health protection. Before that, it was all funded by the state, Rural Child Health Protective Services, Medicare tuberculosis test, but fortunately ours is only $800. Those are the big three. And then we've always had provisions for indigent assistance and ancillary medical. These are the ones, indigent assistance, for instance, are the ones that don't fit any statutory programs that we're going to mention later on, such as indigent medical or indigent accident. These are the folks that their power's getting shut off and they're a family of five. Those types of things that we still feel compelled to want to provide. I'll be honest with you, we haven't utilized that this much this year yet, but we are also very cautious. For instance, we're not going to pay someone's power bill every month. They've got to state their case. They've got to provide income verifications to either Susan or Austin. We're very careful with this, but I will tell you, over the years, this fund continues to get hit more and more as the down economy continues to persist.
Who's our lead on Health and Human Services now?
That would be Austin, but key would be Susan Breiland on a day-to-day basis as well. Okay. And we are watching through the legislative process to make sure this does not go up, because it always can. And that would be one that would cause us to come back to you between tentative and final, or even after final, if they give you a, oh, now you're paying for this too. And if there are no questions, I'll sit down, shut up, and let Mr. Osborne tell you all about planning.
I thought I was second on the agenda.
You still are. Second to last.
Just for the record, my name is Austin Osborne. I'm the administrative officer for the county and serve also the planning administrator for the county. What I'm going to talk about, Pat explained what the administrative budget was about and my role as administrative officer and how that ties into that budget. And then I'm going to come and just explain the planning function, the budget of the planning function, and how that functions. So the general duties of the planner for the county, really they include routine applications and land use duties, legislative work, general assistance to stakeholders, and other duties. So for example, the routine applications and duties would be your special use permits, your variances, your boundary line adjustments, street abandonments, those sorts of things. Basically applications to do something with one's land from which what they want. It's important to note that these become very large projects and can become extremely large projects. To give you an example, you know, some special use permits involve a staff report, go to the Planning Commission, get their approval. It's about maybe an 8-10 week process, give or take. Another special use permit that's supposed to be simple, like towers, can morph into a 6-month-long research project involving time in district, federal court, and those sorts of things. Comstock Mining, you know, for example, not for or against, but can be a very large project, very complex and involving multiple agencies and counties and those sorts of things. So really the planning function goes into the research and development of those sorts of applications. Legislative work, as we experienced last year, is your zoning, your ordinance writing, and those sorts of things. And again, penning the ordinance is not the work. It's the research, it's the public workshops, it's the community involvement, it's involving other agencies, whether it's the state, federal agencies, MDEP, etc. So these things can be easily 18-month processes, like what we saw with Title 17. So that would be another function of really what planning does. Assistance really stakeholders' needs, the front counter and the telephone and the field. It's when people want to do something with their land, they want to open up a business, they want to move their house or build onto their house in a location, whatever it is, parcel maps and surveys and records of surveys, those sorts of matters. we're really planning is the resource to let these people know what they can and can't do and, you know, whatever it is pertaining to their land. And the other, really, the essence of planning in the last two parts, one is the master plan. And that isn't just the document, but it's the planning for the county. It's the goal setting, the objective setting, the policies for the county, and what we want to see our county as far as land use development today and in the future, even as far as 20 years out. And, of course, that does involve the development of the master plan document itself and the update of that, which, like I said earlier, can easily be an 18-month, two-month, or two-year process. Other duties that planning typically does, code enforcement, plan review, workforce development, transportation development, like what we talk about periodically out at Tri-Center, what we're doing for helping people get jobs, helping jobs get to the people, providing workforce training, those sorts of things. Working with our neighbors and land uses that are abutting our county, or like we had discussed earlier today, things that cross the boundaries of our counties. And really working with our regional boards and counties on things like Nevada Works, State Land Use Planning Advisory Council, the Truckee River Flood Project, the Dayton Valley Conservation District, agencies that we need to either watch, be participating in, or that we can work to our advantage mutually to create programs for the county that are little no cost to us through interlocal agreement. So that's essentially what the planning function does. And really, I just want to very briefly discuss two components of the budget, meaning salaries, direct expenses, and then the operational expenses. For planning only, the planning function consists of 2.5 persons. That includes myself. It includes one administrative assistant full-time and one administrative assistant that's less than part-time. The senior planner, as you just heard a moment ago, was merged in with the administrative officer. So now me as the administrative officer, I do both human resources and indigenous care, and then also the planning function. This is expected easily to continue for this entire fiscal period. Somewhere maybe October or November, we would like to look at possibly bringing on board a junior level planner. This would not be a planner at the level that I was or currently sit at. It would be the entry level planner. This planner would be somebody that would start off with general duties like data mining for the master plan, being gradually involved in the public process, writing some basic reports like boundary line adjustments, record of surveys, things like that under my direction. And then gradually, as this planner proves himself or herself, then to gradually merge that planner into higher level duties to be able to take on more and more of the planning function until ultimately would be able to be an equal sharing partner. This planning, our planner also could serve as the portion of the county nuisance officer to deal with certain components of that to help share that load. Could do code enforcement, particularly related to land use and zoning, and then also provide land plan review, particularly to land use and zoning, things like your plots and your setbacks and those sorts of matters. One of my administrative assistants is expected to retire mid-year, around February. That person is not going to be replaced. Instead, what will happen is that person's duties then will be merged in with a little bit of me, a little bit of the junior planner, and also a little bit of the existing administrative assistant. One of the duties that that administrative person does is the minutes for the Planning Commission meeting and attending the Planning Commission meeting. We're looking at the potential of using one of our roving admin assistants that may be able to fulfill just that function and then spend one day thereafter doing the minutes and setting those matters up, but not having that second staff person for that. I'm also looking at getting a couple interns from UNR for the planning function, and the main duty of that would be really pertaining to data mining for the master plan. The fiscal impacts related to salaries and direct expenses, $147,338, going up to $152,424. It's a little bit convoluted between the administrative budget and the planning budget. It comes out to about a 10.5% increase. But salary only comes out to about a $28,000 decrease when you look at the difference between admin budget and the planning budget. So essentially by me fulfilling the role of the HR person from what was done, and then the junior planner fulfilling the role of what I did, comes out to a net increase. The second part of the planning function is the operational expenses. As we know, this is really the supplies, the paper, the posting, the rent, heating the building, those sorts of things. The operational expenses for planning are shared with Dean for a large part. In fact, a third of my budget, 37%, in fact, is shared between me and Dean for the rent of the building, the heating of the building, the rent of the main copy machine for that building, and the postage machine, $500 for that, that we have talked about being upstairs with the clerk's office. The total budget in operational expenses is up 8%. Mainly these items that have gone up, as you see in your breakdown of the items, pertains to postage and public notices. Because of the master plan and because of some anticipated special use permits that we're going to see this fiscal year, these take a tremendous amount of postings, a tremendous amount of property notifications, and it can get very expensive very quickly with these matters. And so as you see, some items go up and some go down. I'm perfectly happy to provide a very brief summary of each line item if you like. Some of them, unless you direct me otherwise, I'll just touch on because they're pretty self-explanatory. There's a couple in here. Maybe I just want to stop for a moment and provide a little explanation. Office supplies is adjusted downward to match anticipated costs. Last year, as we had heard again and again, we had to replace a couple computers that were becoming outdated. We don't have that issue now, so it was adjusted down. Telephone is shared between me and Dean, building and planning. Dues and subscriptions, these really apply to my American Planning Association membership that provides me periodicals, books, and other things. Also will allow me and the junior level planner, when prerequisites are made, to join the American Institute of Certified Planners. Equipment maintenance, $200 unchanged. I should just make a note in here, is the plotter doesn't belong in that, but this really is just copy machine maintenance and general maintenance of machines in Dean's office. Printing, $400 from $600, is basically matching about what we had last year. The cost was brought down with Title 17, with all the printing costs and with the cost associated with the master plan. I don't see the master plan causing any more printing costs than Title 17 did. And Dean and I had sat down and looked at the difference between printing costs between his business license division, which is a tremendous amount of printing, and the planning function, which is a moderate amount of printing. Rents, leases, and purchases need to be added in here. It's $8,500, down from $9,600. Part of this is because a plotter, a Canon large format plotter, was moved into the assessor's office. And then this includes also $500 added to rent the postage machine that we're going to share in the assessor's office. This item right here is the third of my budget. It's the rent of the building and the rent of the copy machine. Those are two of the big ones, the regular copy machine. Training, $3,000. This really applies to my American Planning Association, NACO, National Business Institute. I take trainings and classes in. I attend webinars. I buy a large amount of scholarly books, textbooks on planning-related and industry leadership, those sorts of books, and most of them come from the American Planning Association. And then also this would account for providing some training for the junior-level planner, whatever training that would be needed for that person. Auto maintenance, unchanged, pretty self-explanatory. Records management, I decided to stop using off-site management. Off-site was expensive and it was inconvenient to get documents needed for research, so we keep it all on-site now, so we don't need that anymore. Gas and diesel reduced just to account for anticipated level of travel in the planning function, which there's a number of travel, but it's not tremendous. Public notices are really went up $500, and I think, like I discussed before, as special use permits require per NRS that you do 300 feet or 1,000 feet property notifications to every property. It includes a tremendous amount of mailings and these sorts of things and public notices for everything planning related, but particularly in this case will probably be an influx with the master plan workshops. Building maintenance is pretty self-explanatory. Dean and I share the cost. If we need to replace lights or whatever in the building, we share that. And then last but not least is geographic information services. This is $5,000. Last year, I exhausted every penny of that and more, and that was for the master plan maps. It's important to notice in GIS that a GIS is not cartography. You don't just draw a map and it looks really good. It includes layers and layers and layers and layers of not lines and pictures, but data that makes those lines and pictures, and it takes an unbelievable amount of manpower and time for that. I need to make an adjustment here that does not come from the assessor's tech fund. That comes right out of my regular budget to provide those GIS services. This year, instead of the zoning maps, we're looking at the master plan maps, and again, those will have to be tied to data. They'll have to be tied to data that's parcel map driven. And those are my main items, and I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
I want to know where your energy comes from at this time of night. Congratulations.
Thanks. I mean, and my voice is gone, but thanks.
Yeah, wonderful report. Just the committee greatly professional, as always. Bye. Nice job. Certainly, I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gilman. Appreciate it.
The effort to go into these maps, Austin, is it a one-shot deal? Is it once it's done, it's there forever, and you don't have to go back and reinvent the wheel again?
That's the best thing, and it kind of both ways. Is the best thing about GIS is when things change, you don't have to go and redo the entire map. They can just snap the lines, change the data, boom, done. It's real easy, real great. It's very adjustable. And yes, once they're done, they're done. And the challenge right now, as I think you saw with the assessor's office, is tying that all to the parcel data. We know the challenges with parcels is getting everything to line up, but we're getting there. We're doing great, and our GIS team in Douglas County is unbelievably amazing. They're really a great team.
Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Who wants to go into indigent medical? Huh?
With any luck, these are kind of my last two. Mr. Gallagher and Sherry should take you home on the final eight, I believe. These, again, are longstanding legislative mandates. The good news here is this is where the blessings of the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center and the improvements that have been made out there to real and personal property, or in this case, secured and unsecured taxes, has helped us greatly, particularly in the indigent medical. Indigent medical basically is for citizens of our county that befall any catastrophic medical illness, particularly for those uninsured or potentially underinsured. If they meet certain financial hardships and thresholds, we might be able to help them out. This again falls under the auspices now of Austin. Prior to that, Holly Kiechler, and then Susan Brylander just does a phenomenal job at this. One of the tricks and tools we usually are able to invoke as a local government accessing this fund is we are usually able to arm wrestle with the out-of-county hospitals and get these things reduced down to Medicare rates. I can't tell you what a huge savings that is, so I'm proud of the staff that does that. The real good news here is because of past balances that we've enjoyed with TRI, and countywide, but specifically with the industrial park, and because of some very cautious and conservative utilization of this account, we typically have been able to run this thing at 1/8 of the authorized tax rate by the legislature. The current legislation allows us to do 8%, 8 cents for tax. We're running this particular account at 1 cent. I do want to note, though, again, as you can tell, is we do continue to deplete this balance. You know, there may come a time where we have to address again, and this account in particular is always susceptible to attack by the legislature. We're watching that through Bum, through Mary Walker, through Maggie Lowther, all the time. But it is again for those sad but unavoidable situations where there are emergency medical bills not related to accidents. That'll be an indigent accident. Our tax rate on this is 1%. We're proposing absolutely no change. And over the years, we will continue to watch that ending fund balance to make sure and continue to be very judicious in its use. Any questions? By the way, the overall county controllable tax rate, because keep in mind we can't do things that the state does, the school district is its own local government. But by my records, the overall county tax rate is 2.396. So that is something to keep in mind, and we do try to keep those at those levels, never change them any more than we have to. Indigent accident, this one got swept a couple years ago, much to our chagrin, in a legislative grab. And this is one that runs very close each and every year. These are specific to accidents that occur within our county.
MVAs, most of the time motor vehicles is where this one gets hit the hardest. And we are typically right now tracking about as exactly as we thought we would be. We've expended through February into early March, we've expended about $40,000 of a $71,000 estimated budget. This next year, we're hoping we can hold the line to about $68,000. But it's all a result of unanticipated accidents that cannot be funded through your traditional insurance carriers and whatnot. And that tax rate, excuse me, is 1.5 cents, 1.5 cents. Any questions on those two before Mr. Gallagher takes charge? And by the way, just before we do, because this is hopefully the last time I want to talk, you know, I've done this every year since 2005 and done it for my own department since 1999. I was petrified getting a new management analyst in that had watched the budget last year but had never performed the surgery that it needs to put it together like it is. And then at the request of commissioners, you know, we really wanted more direct involvement in the day-to-day budgeting cycle for the comptroller. And I got to tell you, every year I think I've talked about how proud I am of the team. I'm exceptionally proud of this team this year because, you know, there have been challenges and negotiations. I have never once felt uncomfortable with the process, and I certainly applaud both our comptroller and our management analysts for getting it this far in the process in the shape that it's in. I've never seen it better.
All righty. Capital projects.
Mr. Chairman, capital projects is pretty much going to be used for those items that come up from time to time that can't be handled by infrastructure or by an individual department's capital outlay. However, it did have a healthy fund balance in 2011, but pre-bonding costs on the rail project, that's what I had. So there's not a whole lot of income balance, and if there is, maybe something, if you had something in case there's something goes wrong with the courthouse or whatever, we're going to just allocate $5,000 of that, hope this thing builds up. It doesn't, it has no revenue source. So it's there as an ending fund balance. The only way we can beef this thing up is if we, you know, throw some money at it. The next one is infrastructure. In October of 2000, Resolution 0088 was approved by the Board of County Commissioners to increase the sales tax in use in Story County by 0.25% to fund water facilities and school renovations within the county. That was further done by Ordinance 169, of which, as I mentioned before, the Hugh Gallagher Elementary got $200,000, the Virginia City Middle got $220,000, and there was waterline replacement for $1 million. We paid the school debt. We never came close to, I think it was about a couple hundred thousand, which leaves us still with a balance. However, now that we've done that, currently a new plan is being developed for disbursement of the remaining funds. This will have approval by Department of Taxation before a new ordinance can be drafted and approved by the Board of County Commissioners. This will include several items of which we will take a look at it, hopefully get the taxations agreement on. Part of it is obviously I'm going to be Mike's water line, or is the water pipe issue, trying to get that resolved as best we can. There can be some other ones, as the purchase of the fire department and the Highlands, because in the ordinance, or the NRS as it was originally established, was very, very restrictive. Now it is all over the place. So it has expanded itself greatly, so it can use several purposes. So what we're looking at is um,
this will probably come before the final. We will probably have a pretty good idea what the, what our rotation is going to be for the disbursements of these funds, and we'll have that for you probably by the final. Stabilization is a fund that was created by Chapter 354, 6115 of the Nevada Revised Statutes, which purposely said that money in a fund must be used only in the total actual revenue of a local government falls short of the total anticipated revenue in the general fund for that fiscal year. Whereas they cannot be paid for expenses to mitigate the effects of the NAP, or it can be used in conjunction with the mitigation fund if we've got a national disaster. But cannot exceed 10% of the expenditures of the general fund for the previous year. This is a, this is our rainy day fund.
Yep.
And we've got that at 600,000. We try and put something in here every year just in case something happens, but that's pretty much 10% that we're going to, or 20% we're going to do, and that just kind of remains stoic until hopefully nothing does happen, but that's what's up. Our next one is... the town of Gold Hill and the town of Virginia City. My recommendation is that we eliminate both of these funds due to the fact that revenue stream from the business licenses, liquor licenses, cabaret taxes, some state gaming are now being transferred to the Tourism Commission. The expenses that currently exist for street lighting utilities and street light repairs are going to be transferred to Mr. Nevin. And I think that in this case, what we'll do is we'll, before the final, we will have a resolution to dissolve both of these with the ending fund balance going into the general.
Sounds good.
The tri-payback fund. Tri-payback fund was done in 2009. And what happened with the original intent of the tri-payback fund is never ever having to go into the general or any other fund to pay off our debt to our public-private partner.
Right.
As I looked at this in 2009, it scared me because we were just getting to that $5 million threshold, of which we were then obligated to pay, based upon net revenues, a refund of 35% of net revenue to expenses. And I had no idea where that number was going to be, because at that point in time, we probably had, in 2009, we probably had three or four years that didn't have an audit on it. So we have, I said, we need to do that. And so they've been, didn't know what the tax rate was going to be, didn't know what the percentage of it was going to be, but I knew that we had to put something in. We have now, since then, the outside CPAs, Coon Kleckman, has now, and probably will be before the final is done, have completed every year but this current year. So now I'll have an idea of exactly what we will owe and what liability we will now, based upon the new developer agreement, go forward. And so that's pretty much what that fund is. So But the idea, again, was never to have either general or any other fund have to pay for this. And this is derived from revenues that we received from the industrial park that, per the developer agreement, that we must include in that revenue portion that is now deducted from our expenses to get to that net figure. The Virginia City Rail Project is basically the payment of the bond that we are incurring, even though we are still trying to find a reduction in the amount that that thing is going to cost us.
No.
I applaud everybody in saying when those initial reports came in, it says that we're either $1 million or $1.5 million over what was projected. And instead of trying to fund that, everybody said, let's take a step back and take a look at it, and I applaud them for doing that. But this still continues. And I think the last thing on here is
Good.
Absolutely.
We did.
Well, I'll make this very brief. Basically, you have in front of you, I think you received late, probably in the third packet that went out on Friday, a grant budget. This is Fund 206. I'm going to tell you that this is a very dynamic fund. We have optimistically budgeted going into this fiscal year, but we really have no idea what's going to happen. With federal budget cuts to programs, we remain uncertain for funding levels. Many of these grants that we receive come down from the feds to the state. A lot of those programs are being cut. We continue to maintain good relationships to keep on top of this, to know where these projects are going, these programs, if they're going to continue to be funded. I'll give you a brief overview by department of the grants we're looking at for this fiscal year. First, I'm going to start with the Emergency Management Department and the grants that we anticipate receiving for this fiscal year. As you can see on your sheet, I don't know if you want me to go through and explain every one. Tell me if you'd like me to, but it's listed here on the sheet. Okay. The first one we're looking at is United We Stand. That's a $30,000 grant that carries no match. The funds for this grant come from the United We Stand license plates that you see on cars throughout the state of Nevada. That grant has not been submitted yet. It will be submitted probably the beginning of June. We're eligible to apply for up to $30,000, and we usually take advantage of that full amount. We can put in for items. I think this year we're looking to do some fencing down at the jail to protect critical infrastructure. In addition, we're looking at some mapping of the water utilities in the Lockwood area. And thirdly, I think we have some remaining funds. We may look at supporting some search and rescue equipment that the Sheriff's Office may request as they move forward with establishing those programs. The second one is Emergency Management Performance Grant. Historically, we have received this grant every year for $20,679. That's federal funds. We have to match that 50%. That amount supports a portion of my salary. This is a federal grant, and we have no word on if this will come through or not. So like I say, we're optimistic that it's going to happen, but I have no idea. The next one is Hazardous Materials Emergency Planning, Fire Shows Reno Training for $3,000. This carries no match. This is a grant that we apply for every year to send our hazmat technicians from the fire department and any other public partners that we have through our LEPC who are responsible for hazmat functions to an annual training in Reno. It's $195 per person, and we typically send between 15 and 20 individuals to that. The next three here are all state emergency response commission grants, and we have successfully been awarded these three. So those funds are committed. Each of these do not carry any match. So the first one you see is for $29,158. And this will fund replacement of handheld radios for the fire department. I think Gary mentioned it in a couple commissioners' meetings ago. That's what that'll do. $4,000, Joe spoke briefly about that, but that's funds that we get to basically support our LEPC. supporting costs to hold our meetings, any office supplies that we have. It's just operations funds. The third one here for fire shows Reno coordination, that's $40,000. Basically, we are just a pass-through for that. They allocate $40,000 to put on that hazmat training that I was just telling you. So basically, we just hold those funds, and we pay a consultant who manages that show. So it's basically we get the money and we expend it. There's no match to that. The next one, which we have been working on since 2009, is the Six Mile Canyon Drainage Improvement Project. This is a FEMA grant. This is a 75% federal funding, 25% match. This is a very long process. I'm hoping, very optimistic, that we're going to get this funding in this fiscal year. It's about a $1.1 million in grant and about $371,000 in match over like a three-year period to do some storm drainage improvements in Six Mile Canyon. As you know, when we get, you know, major flooding, basically that road is closed because we don't have the proper drainage down there. So this project would improve all of that. Long process. We're in NEPA reviews currently, so there's no telling when we'll be done with that and be able to move forward and secure the funding. So basically, those are all the grants that emergency management has in our department. Moving forward, the district attorney's office has been successful in receiving funding over the past several years to support a victim services unit by receiving a STOP grant, and I can't tell you the acronyms behind that. I'm sorry, I don't have that here. They basically receive funding in the amount of $13,000 to support a less than part-time position, their victim services advocate, I think that's the position that they call it, and any associated supplies. That grant does carry a match of $4,400. They have received that for this year. I believe the funding starts in January of every year, so we kind of cross over two fiscal years with this particular grant. The Sheriff's Office has applied for two grants and hopes to receive funding from the Office of Traffic Safety for two different programs. The first is a Joining Forces program, and basically that is different things like click-it-or-ticket campaigns, DUI enforcement, those type programs. So that would be a $12,000 grant that they've applied for with a $3,000 in-kind match. So in-kind services would be staff time and any associated costs they might have for fuel to put on these type of events. They've also applied again through the Office of Traffic Safety for a radar replacement grant. Those are the things that you see on the highway that record your speed. The units that they currently have are getting antiquated. So they're requesting $4,975 to purchase. There's an in-kind match. I'm not certain on the amount. Moving along, the fire department has successfully received a grant in the amount of $252,000. I think Gary spoke briefly about that, but that's a USDA Fuels Management grant. It's administered by NDF, and they have various, I think he spoke about that earlier, various different things that they're going to do with that. So fuel reductions, we're looking to do an full-scale evacuation drill at the Virginia City Highlands. So there's various different components in that grant, and they have received that. They have also applied for a grant through the Office of Traffic Safety to replace some of their medical equipment, specifically their pulse ox equipment. That grant is for $73,529 with a match of $22,000, which is in kind. That has been submitted, and we have not heard on that. The next grants that I'm going to speak about fall under the Commissioner's Office. We have the Historic Preservation Grant that we're looking to continue the electrical upgrades that we've started here in the courthouse. I received notice about 2 weeks ago that they are still waiting for their allocations from the federal government. So we continue to monitor this one very closely. We've applied for $43,000. We've got a cash match of $28,680, which would come from buildings and grounds. The next is cultural affairs, and I spoke about that, I believe, at the last commission meeting. I went to a hearing for that. They currently don't have any funding. They anticipate that they will going forward. That grant we've applied for is for $44,000, again, to continue the renovations in this building with a $20,000 cash match coming from Buildings and Grounds. The next grant is a community services block grant for child care and employment assistance that we sponsor for Community Chest. The amount is unknown at this time. They're currently preparing their budgets to submit for that grant, so hopefully by the time we get to final budget hearings, I'll have a better number on that grant, but that carries no match. The county, there's no cost to us on that. The next one that I'm going to speak about is the United States Army Corps of Engineers Wastewater System Design. This is a continuing grant. The sewer fund, that's the $93,000 match that they have. We've got approximately $369,000 left in grant funds. That'll get us through some more of the design phase for the sewer replacement as we work through all of that. The next item here would be the USDA Rural Development Grant. That is for the additionally for the sewer replacement, and that's in the amount of $2.3 million. And like that was mentioned earlier, we have received unofficial notice that we have received those funds. Moving along, the VCTC has applied for about six grants to continue to promote tourism here in the county. These are grants that they typically receive each year. I'm not going to go through each one of these. I think you have it here, but they've got various different programs they're doing. Most all of these grants carry either a cash or an in-kind match. Those have all been submitted, and I believe they hear sometime in June whether or not they have those funds. And the last is the Justice Court and the Clerk's Office have applied jointly for funding to upgrade the audio-video equipment here in the courtroom. That grant is for $11,035, and it has a match of $4,730 that will be split between the District Court and the Justice Court. I think they will hear before July 1st on that particular. So we have it in there just in case it crosses fiscal years. But that pretty well takes care of everything. So we're looking, if we receive everything that we're hoping to receive, about $4.4 million. Any questions?
That's great work. Thank you. We can use it. Hurry up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you again, Sherry, for stepping up to the plate on the ground.
Sure. And hopefully by final budget hearings, we have a little bit accurate numbers on what we're going to do here. So. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. We're on item 35. Any last-minute comments on that? And Janet?
My name is Janet Houts. I'm just going a few department by department on the community services. I see the who is not around. I was looking at the support for the nonprofit organizations, and I see that Piper House donated as $13,500. Now, when I was looking under the IRS, to the Department of Taxation, the IRS, there is no filing of 990. The last final that they filed was 2006. So I do not know whether they are qualified as a nonprofit or not. So this is the things that when we are using our county monies, are we just donating, just giving to them without checking whether they are qualified, whether they have fulfilled the requirement, annual requirement on the filing basis.
Mr. Chairman, just to interject here, that payment will be made to the Story County School District as it has this year. It's a commitment of a shared partnership with the district, not with the Piper House. Right. Thank you.
So can I just get confirmation? Is that sales has been completed on the Upper House?
You have to ask the school district that.
Okay.
Our payments go to the Story County School District, not to the Piper House.
Thank you. From Commissioner, I was looking, Commissioner Department, I was looking at it, and I didn't realize that with the new commissioner, the expenses like seems to be slightly higher. I see that you have projected $1,000 for the meetings materials, and then $7,000 for the economics, I think, I can't remember what's the name now. So it looked like, to me, it looked like, maybe I'm wrong. The way I see is that when the new commissioner coming in, stepping in, it seems that more expenses coming in. So I do not know why. So now, on the IT side, to be very frank with you, my computers, I have used 8 years, and I'm working 10 to 12 hours a day. My husband doesn't like me to work in the computers because when I sit down, I sit the whole day instead. I'm not just working on something else, but I'm also looking on my personal things on the investment portfolio. So my computers is working like crazy. On the infrastructures, 0.25% of the sales tax is supported for the infrastructures. And in 2012, the state reported $172,189. To this, but in the ledger, it only show 1,666,000. So there's a difference of about 6,000. I just do not know where it go to. Now, there is a transfer of $111,000 from infrastructures to Virginia City Rail. And which Virginia City Rails was recorded only $74,000. So there is a difference. So I do not know what is, it's about $37,000. So I do not know where it goes to. Because when I look at the ledgers and look at the transfer on the budget, so that is a difference. So maybe there's something that's going to another account, I do not know. My question is that, Why are the management transferring?
Let's start wrapping it up, Janet. You're over your 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, in the this in the sales tax, there shows in 2011 $150,000. And 2012, 172. I do not see where it is, where's the ledger, where the fund is. Now, can I ask you, what is this $700,000 project fund, project as allocated?
Wrap it up.
My question is that, when there is no revenue in this rail, but we are paying $710,000, from 2013 to 2028. Why? Where is the funding?
Entertain a motion to
finish
item number 35. It's the 35. Tentative.
All right.
Can you still talk?
Can you still talk?
I can now.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, move for approval on item number 35, the tentative budget hearings and the ones that we just, you want me to list each one that we just reviewed?
I think we know that we're complete
as
on that.
Vice Chairman McBride, I'd suggest that it just be for all funds and departments accepting the NRS 473, the NRS 474, and the water and sewer.
As read into the record, my motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we've got 36 done, 37's done, 38's continued. Licensing.
All of them are good to go. If you need me to speak
to the Community Development Department does recommend that all of the second reading business licenses
all
are approved. Correct.
Wow.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, speaking of item number 39, move for approval of second reading from licensing.
I'll second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Do you have any comments from the Board of Commissioners, Lance?
I really applaud everybody's efforts. Sit here with you guys and stuff, people. It's been a great deal. Awesome. You're still here. Congratulations.
I'll tell you what.
Jeff, you're still here. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just had a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. Thanks, everybody, for all their
people. I've been doing this for 35 years, and it's the longest meeting I've ever participated in.
We're on record.
You got anything, Marsh?
Well, hope we're not on overtime.
Bill just requested some over here. He sent me a note.
I want a new line item.
You want a new line item?
He's slept for 12.
Well, I think if you can find a bar open, you ought to go do it.
I may eat.
I
may try to find that jack in the box. I've been looking out over here.
We're adjourned, Mr. Chairman.
We're adjourned. We're out of here.